Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
Well, the end zone caught. Rosen intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants chat on Twitter. Paul Dottino, John Schmoke with you, taking your calls for the next hour about Giants football and anything else you want to talk about in the National Football League. Paul, good afternoon. How are you?
Good to see you, John. A bit overcast, and I think a lot of rain's going to be coming that our way the next couple of days. But
looks that
we could
way.
Use some of it, though. You know, to be honest, it's been great now for a couple of weeks. And
I got a big outdoor day planned tomorrow.
Do you?
I got a day off for my first time in like 3 weeks.
Oh, that's not cool. I'm sorry to hear that. But you know what? The plants, the grass, the trees, the flowers, they need some water too, you know. But I hope you get your stuff in and then it rains. How about that?
Yeah, well, it's supposed to rain starting in the morning. I actually looked at that today. So we'll see what happens. Anyway, here's the deal today, folks. We want to try to mix it up a little bit and do a couple topic shows. We talked a little bit about biggest impact player a couple days ago. So Paul came in today and we had a little powwow. And we thought a good question for today would be, what player do you think is most important to the Giants defense in 2015? I really do think it's an interesting question, Paul, because I think you go a lot of different directions. I mean, you could talk about Jason Pierre-Paul, the need to get a consistent pass rush and have a big pass rush threat. You could talk about John Beeson, the impact he has stopping the run of middle linebacker, especially given his injury history, how important it is for him to be on the field. Or you could go to the cornerback position. You know what you have in Prince Mukamara and Dominique Rodgers-Camardi? Behind those two guys, not to say there aren't options, but there's nobody as accomplished as those top two guys if one of those guys happened to go down. Then you have safety, where you have a lot of inexperience and you're counting on a second-round pick in Landon Collins. Is he the guy that you need the most to step in this year and be a very, very good player? So I think there are a lot of different ways you can go here when discussing who the most important player on this defense is going to be in 2015.
I couldn't agree with you more, John. When you brought it up earlier this morning, I mean, I immediately just started scratching my head thinking to myself, you could go a lot of different ways here, and it's really because of how you interpret the question.
Yeah.
You know, because quite honestly, I think, you know, as I looked at the choices, and we were talking about this, Landon Collins is the one that kind of stuck out to me, and the reason is because the Giants are so thin at safety. And he's going to be penciled in, I'm sure, as the immediate starter in week one. But we have absolutely no idea, John, as we sit here today, who the Giants are going to determine as their other starter. We think that Napier has the lead on that, but we don't know that for sure. And we have no idea who's going to win that third and who is going to be the fourth safety if they even keep four. There's a chance they could keep three. I don't think so. But you and I have no idea who those guys are going to be. So I would say right now, the potential drop-off between Landon Collins and the Invisible Man.
But then again, you're assuming you know Landon Collins is, too. That's the trick. I mean, you talk about him being the most important player. Does anybody really know what he is? Obviously, there are expectations. You know what he did in college. You hope he's going to be, you know, the type of player that the Giants describe. But you know how the draft works. Some guys develop quicker than others. Some guys don't. In the end, you're rolling the dice on these guys. You can make really well-educated guesses, but you never really know 100% for sure whether or not a guy is going to succeed. So that's why I would hesitate brandishing a rookie with that type of title, because I think it's undue pressure on a kid to expect him to be the most important and pivotal player on this defense in his rookie year when he was a second-round pick. I know he was the first pick in the second round, but nevertheless, Paul, I'm not sure I'm willing to throw that type of weight on a rookie's shoulders. I don't think it's fair.
I think, again, it depends on how you interpret the question, because if you go with the fact that the safety is already a question and then there's questions below that, the spot is literally such a Bermuda Triangle of sorts, of mystery, that that's kind of why I could see you going in that way. But at the on the other take of that, I could take a deep breath and say, John, there's no doubt in my mind, it's John Beeson. If John Beeson stays on the field and plays 12 to 14 games and greatly enhances this rush defense, the Giants will be a much better team for it. And I think that's the easy answer. you know, if you want to just go right off of veteran production and the evidence that we've seen over the last 2 years, when Beeson's been in the games, they have been a much better defense.
No, they have. You're absolutely right. They've been a much, much better defense against the run specifically. I mean, that's where he really helps. Now, you hope some of the other improvements they've made on the defensive line, Kenrick Ellis being one of them, maybe a linebacker, JT Thomas, Jonathan Casillas, you move on from Jaquan Williams. Those things all put together will help you run defense in addition to Beeson being there. But I think the guy I'm going to land on here, Paul, I think I have to go with JPP. And here's why. Okay. I think the Giants need that type of pressure off of the edge that another team has to focus on to make things easier on the rest of the defensive line. Yeah, I know Jonathan Hankins put up great numbers last year, and I think he's a very accomplished tackle. I think Robert Ayers is a good complement to JPP on the other end. I know Demontre Moore and Owa and all these guys have potential. That's great. But you need that big guy that other teams have to dedicate a running back to, have to keep their tight end in a little bit to block, that you have to really base your offensive protections around in order to be effective. Throwing also in the fact that JPP is a very capable run defender,
absolutely,
which is another big part of it. I think if for whatever reason the Giants would ever lose JPP, I don't think that's a loss they could recover from, barring another player playing absolutely way over what they've ever played before.
Very fair statement and a lot of logic behind it, because I really believe you have to have, you know, and the Cowboys are learning this now, the Jets learned it last year, regardless of what you think of your defense, and the Jets, of course, you know, with this terrific defensive line that they have, but they don't have that one dominant guy. They don't have that one guy who's capable of getting 14 to 15 sacks during the course of the season. And so I absolutely see the logic there. The only thing that would make me hesitate in that direction is that I think we agreed the other day on the program the Giants will probably keep six defensive ends. And with six defensive ends, you'd like to believe that somebody in that group, whether it's Demontre Moore finally getting it, or maybe Owa makes a huge splash as a rookie, or maybe Robert Ayers is really healthy and increases his sack production, that somehow, some way, they could make up for that if JPP wasn't JPP. That would be the only thing that would make me hesitate. But your logic is sound. And it's certainly a legitimate answer, no question.
And I think corner's another spot. I mean, what happens if Prince Amukamara or Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie goes out for the year?
Don't even think about that. Don't even think about that, because right now there is very questionable depth behind them. Steve Spagnuolo himself said at the presser the other day, you were there, John, you were on the patio, you heard him say it, corner was a significant concern, and he wasn't even sure who his nickel was going to be. He said, McBride played well a couple years ago when I saw the tapes, And he put something good on film, but he said he's going to mix and match, even during OTAs. He said, you're going to see everybody out there doing it, because he's not sure. He doesn't have an answer. So corner's absolutely a legitimate option on this question. This is why when he sprung this on me this morning, I said, wow, you could do a three-hour show on this one.
Yeah, you absolutely can. And, you know, I think it's really interesting that there are so many pivot points here on this defense, because, you know, if you look at where this Giants roster is, I don't think anybody would doubt, Paul, heading into this season, that if there's one area where the Giants would have to improve if they want to become a playoff team again, it's on the defensive side of the ball. I think we'll see some natural progression on offense, it being their second year under Ben McAdoo, improvement on the offensive line. You hope Cruz and Beckham are both healthy the whole year. You'll see some natural improvement there. But where you need to see some significant improvements is on defense. And Steve Spagnuolo, the new defensive coordinator, is one area they want to get better. They added Kenrick Ellis, and then it's the health factor. Is Prince going to be healthy? Is Beeson going to be healthy? Can Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, who played last year but not at 100%, can he be healthy? You mentioned the safeties. Can you figure that position out? Can JPP put together another double-digit sack season? I mean, there are so many pivot points here as to places where you have to be good if this defense is going to be where it has to be if this team wants to make the playoffs.
Yeah, and the reason that is, John, and really when you get down to it, and it's a magnified situation, because of so many guys last year who got nicked up, so many guys last year who were injured at all of the different levels of the defense. And so now you're looking for those guys to be healthy. You've tried to supplement them as best as you could, you know, during the course of the offseason, but you just don't know. So it's going to be a very interesting year. One way or the other, John, I swear to you, this is going to be a very interesting season.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. And I think the defense is what a lot of people will keep an eye on as you move forward. And I think when you debate, too, the most important player on this defense, and we'll get to your calls, by the way, in just a second, at 201-939-4513. This is the last point I want to make. Steve Spagnuolo likes to have guys that can win their one-on-one matchups and get to the quarterback. Mm-hmm. But if they can't, he will blitz. If you go back to his years with Philadelphia, he blitzed an awful lot. So if you can't get there with those front four, you will blitz, and that's okay. But if you do that, what do you need?
Coverage.
You need corners on the outside that can cover one-on-one. So that, to me, is where this pivot's going to be. If JPP can't be that sack guy, well, then you have to blitz, and then you have to have good corner play. But if JPP's great, you know, if the blitz is much, well, then you know what? Maybe you don't need that stellar play at the cornerback position. So I think within Spags' defensive scheme, there are some fulcrums here that could tip things either way based on how the season goes.
Of course, the fact that you even mentioned Spags is also one of the relying points, or should I say safety points, the Giants can rely on, because no matter what the situation is, and even if one of the units gets nicked up, I have a lot of confidence in Spags, knowing him as well as I do, that you know, he'll scheme around some things if he has to. He can do that. He's very good. One of his finest traits is his ability to improv, especially during the course of a game. So, you know, he'll find out the strengths to all of these different guys who he doesn't really know very well right now, and he'll find a way to get the most out of them. I will say this. Can I make a very bold statement right now on May 15th?
Paul Dottino bold statements. I like those.
I will say this, and I'll say this with a lot of confidence and with a lot of certainty. The Giants' defense will absolutely max out. They will not underachieve. Their guys, whether or not they have guys who are hurt and are unable to play, I can't predict that. But I guarantee you he will get the most out of whoever is on the field. I guarantee that beyond any doubt.
Now, the beautiful part of that bold statement, there's no way to eventually prove you're wrong.
Well, I suppose. I wasn't thinking along those lines. I really wasn't.
I wasn't trying
to lay a safety net underneath me, but I guess there isn't. I don't know. But
And look, Paul, but honestly, I don't disagree. Spags knows how to use his personnel.
At the end of the season, I don't think we're going to be shaking our heads saying, oh, that guy should have been better. I just don't think that's going to happen. Even a guy like DeMontre Moore, who's in a show-me year, I got a feeling, John, that we're going to see a lot more out of DeMontre Moore, if not just for his own maturity, which, fingers crossed, I think Spags is going to help bring it out.
All right. Final question for you before we get to the call.
Yes.
And this is a tough question, and I'm putting you on the spot, and I fully accept that. Best case scenario here, okay?
Yes.
If the Giants are a playoff team,
yes,
where does the team have to be defensively ranked? You can go yards, you can go points, you can go third down percentage, if you think that was the most important thing. How good does this defense have to be? Do they have to be top 10?
Yes.
Do they have to be top 15?
Top 10.
You think they have to be in the top 10?
I think the Giants have to be a top 10 defense.
Scoring yards?
In points allowed.
Okay.
Now remember,
that can be affected by the offense too, based on turnovers and things like that.
Yes. And that's why I'm going with that stat.
Okay.
Because ultimately, it's points that win or lose games for you, not all the other numbers.
Yes.
So I'm strictly going to go, if the Giants have a top 10 defense in points allowed, I do think they're a playoff team, because I don't have much doubt that they're going to be top 10 in offense and points scored.
I think they will be top 10 in points scored offensively. So I think they only have to be top 15 in terms of overall defense. I'm not saying that's going to guarantee a playoff spot, but I think that'll put them in the mix. I think if they're in that 20 range, I think that's when you get into the danger zone.
Perhaps. I'm expecting and asking for a little more than that.
201-939-4513. Back to the phones. Let's go to Vic in Florida. He's been holding the longest. Victor, what's up?
Good afternoon, John and Paul.
Hi, Vic.
I have to agree with Paul on one thing. I think that this year DeMontre Moore is going to come out of his shell simply because Spagnuolo is going to get him to go. And not only that, but it's either, you know, play this year or don't play at all. Because he's at 3 years already with the Giants, and he hasn't shown too much. Now, my other thing is, I was reading an article on SB Nation Big Blue View, And they said there's no way that the Giants are going to be a playoff team because Philadelphia and Dallas are too good of a team, too good of teams. Well, I remember not long ago the Giants were 9-7, and everybody wrote them off, and they end up winning the Super Bowl. Okay. The other thing I want to say is why did they pass on Harrington, the corner from New England?
Well, I don't think there's any. I don't think you know that they passed on him. How do you know Arrington didn't want to play somewhere else? It's not like And Vic, I don't mean to single you out on this. There seems to be a tendency with fans that whenever the Giants don't get anybody, that they passed on them. You do realize, and again, Vic, this is not directed at you, because you are not the person that does this the most. But there are 31 other NFL teams.
Yes, there are.
That have the same amount of. Sometimes more money available to them as the Giants to go out there and acquire the same players that the Giants might want to acquire. The Giants are not going to get every single player that's out there. Do you know why? There's competition. So sometimes you could say, how did Jerry Reese not get this guy? I don't know what he's doing. Oh, he's clueless. How do you not get him? He was the best player out there. Well, you know what?
Every
other team is saying the exact same thing. There's honest competition. Every team is trying to win Super Bowls here, not just the Giants.
If I could shorten that very briefly, that's why they're called free agents.
Yes. And by the way, and Vic, it's not just the teams that compete with each other. Players are going to pick where he wants to go. For example, for all the people that were freaking out over Leo Collins not coming here, if you go and you read, I think it was on Monday Morning Quarterback, Robert Klemko had an in-depth hour by hour with his agents on how the whole thing played out with him.
Oh, good. I didn't see it.
And when he got down to it and he narrowed down what teams he wanted to go to, he narrowed it down to, I think, little less than half the teams in the league. The second most, he had two priorities on his list. One, he wanted to be close to home, which is LSU. Two, he didn't want to be in cold weather.
So then you tell me
why the Giants didn't get him. Is it the Giants' fault? Or is it the fact that Leo Collins didn't
John,
want
I got a question for Paul. It's a trivia question.
Okay.
Are you ready
Let's
for this,
stump
Paul?
Stump the Tino. Let's go.
Ahead.
Okay. In 1968, the Giants played the Rams in the very last game of the season. If they had beaten the Rams, they would have been in the playoffs.
Vic, that's 1970, not 1968. They lost 31-3.
I'm sorry, 1970.
Yeah.
Okay, you're right. Who were the two tight ends? And one of them had a nice pass thrown at him about 32 yards, and they called him out of bounds. Who was the tight end?
Aaron Thomas was one of them, and Bob Tucker was the other one.
No, you're wrong on that one.
You sure?
Yes, Aaron Thomas and Bobby Crispino.
Crispino.
Oh, how about that? Okay, now, Vic, in fairness, Paul did have to correct part of your trivia question, so I'm going to give him
half credit,
even though if we're getting part of the answer wrong.
All right, guys. I listen to your show. I love you guys. Have a great weekend, and I'll talk to you again next week, pal.
Thank you. Appreciate it. I don't know if you had a chance to read that yet, though. On that Monday Morning Quarterback, he said two of his top priorities were staying close to home at LSU and not playing in cold weather.
That already tells you a lot about where he was going to go. So, I mean, it's cold here in December.
New York's far away from LSU, and by the way, it's cold up here.
And there's no roof on this building.
That is absolutely true.
Yeah.
Absolutely true.
To address an earlier point, I do want to mention this because DeMontre Moore, I believe, just finished his classes.
Oh, did he?
At college.
In fact, I see here
Art Stapleton say DeMontre getting ready to pack his trip up, and he's got stuff here about packing and saying, people can't wait to see him again back there. So it looks like he had a going away party at college. So apparently,
you weren't invited to that?
No. I guess I didn't make the list. What can you say?
You would have loved to go to Texas, get it, tan up a little bit.
Yeah, I could use some.
Because you're a real pal.
In any event, DeMontre's apparently done with his classes, so good for him.
Yep.
Congratulations to him, and I'm looking forward to seeing him here in the offseason program as soon as possible. I know Spags said the other day he was proud of him for finishing up school, which is a great thing, and he's certainly very eager to get him here. Because I think, much like the rest of us, John, we've seen some of the cut-ups on DeMontre Moore. I mean, again, the skill set is out of this world, and I can only imagine what a guy like Spags might be able to do with him. And I think when they sit down, and it's going to be very soon, he's going to try to bring out the best in him. It should be effective. I think it's going to work.
I agree. We'll see what happens. Let's go back to the phones and go to Jason in Texas. He's up next. What's up, Jason?
Hey, fellas. Hey, this is kind of a tough one, but I'm going to have to go with secondary, man. I just feel that if the secondary can get sewn up and we can, you know, play well against the pass, that we would be able to give our pass rushers time to pass to rush the quarterback.
Jason, I'm not going to let you get away with just picking a position here. You got to give me a player in that secondary. Give me the one individual you think is most important to this team in 2015.
Well, I'm gonna go with Landon Collins, and that's a lot to put on a rookie, I know, but we have to get that secondary sewn up. And if we have Prince and DRC playing healthy, then we're gonna need Landon Collins to step up.
Well, you know, the one interesting part about your equation there is, let's just say, like what John was talking about with the corners before, let's say everything goes really, really well with the corners. The fact remains, Landon Collins is going to have to live up to the hype, and he's going to have to do it quickly, because the last thing in the world you want are corners who can get things done on the outside, but then safeties who can't get it done deep or over the top or in the box and wind up being weak. You know, they say in baseball you have to be strongest up the middle to have a chance. In a lot of ways, that's true in football too. And so there's a tremendous amount of responsibility on Landon Collins' shoulders. Let's not kid ourselves. John makes a great point, though. You don't know what he's going to be, so how do you gauge the importance of the drop-off? I understand that.
Yeah,
it's an interesting point.
I think the question is that what's your expectation level? And I think until you set that expectation level, and I always hate to set the expectation level for a rookie too high,
yeah,
simply because you don't know what's going to happen in the NFL. That's why I hesitate to put him into the conversation, because I know what John Beeson can be when he's on the field and really good. I know what DRC can be when he's on the field and really good. I know what JPP looks like at his peak and the impact those guys can have on a defense. As high of hopes I have for Landon Collins, as good as I think he can be, I don't know. Nobody does. He hasn't been on the field yet in an NFL game.
You know, like I said before, if JPP were to go out, they have five other defensive ends probably going to make the team.
Which is fair.
If Beeson goes out, McClain moves into the middle in all likelihood. At least I know there's somebody there who could play.
Or even JT Thomas, who started games for the Jaguars last year.
My
absolutely.
Problem with safety right now is I just don't know.
Yeah, I just feel we have depth at a lot of the other positions. And at our secondary, we're really thin there. So,
you know what? I will say.
Like I said,
do you have a chance to come out to camp?
It has me a little worried.
Do you have a chance to come out to camp at all, or no? Are you local?
He's in Texas, Paul.
Oh, you're in Texas.
I'm in Texas.
Yes,
but you don't come up at all for the summer.
I came out for 2013, but I don't think I'm going to make it out this year.
All right, if you do make it up, I would tell you the one thing you certainly want to watch is the secondary if you get up here in August to summer camp and give it a look, because there's going to be a lot of faces up here, the Mike Harris's of the world, the Shockey Browns of the world, who are going to get reps and going to get a chance to show if they belong and where they belong on the depth chart, you know. And that, to me right now, that entire – you know, you said secondary. John was going to pin you down, and I appreciate him doing that because, you know, we don't want to let you weasel out. But you're right. The secondary is the one unit that I think we all have to watch very carefully every single snap of practice, because the Giants really need to figure out exactly where they're at with those guys.
All right. Well, I appreciate taking my call. And
thank you.
Guys, take it easy.
Thanks, Jason. One other thing, too, to put in the mix at cornerback at least. One of the guys that's been a staple of this defensive coaching staff was Peter Ginta.
Yes.
You know, he was the Giants' quarterback's coach since, boy, did he get here with Tom in 2003?
Yeah.
Three,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, he's been here a long time.
2004,
excuse me. He's been here a very long time. So, I mean.
Great guy, great coach.
And, again, I know what Peter Ginta could do. Tim Walton comes in. He has good experience with, you know, Jim Schwartz over there in St. Louis, and with Steve Spagnuolo before that when he was there. So I'm sure he'll come in and do a good job. But that's another adjustment the Giants have here. They do have a different guy coaching these quarterbacks.
I think the one thing that that helps that, though, is that DRC's been around in this league for a while. He's been with a number of different places. So an adjustment for him, that won't be new. He's had to do that a number of times already in his career.
Prince hasn't, though.
Now, Prince hasn't. That's the guy, to me, who will have the biggest adjustment, because all he's ever known is Coach Ginta.
And Ginta has a very unique one-on-one way of working with
him. He really
does.
These guys. He's a real people person.
Oh, absolutely.
And so, to me, that's the one guy in the secondary who will have the biggest adjustment to make. And the only thing I'll say about that is he's still on the younger side of his career.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not like his habits are so ingrained in cement that he shouldn't be able to do it.
Oh, I by no means mean to imply that this is a downgrade of any kind. Absolutely not. Tim Walters did do an excellent job.
Wasn't
just
suggesting
having
that
two different types of voices. And
yes.
You got to see how that affects with the players that have been here before. Tremaine McBride was here with Peter Ginta. And Peter Ginta really helped bring his career back after he you know, really was
Chicago.
Almost out of the NFL as a six-year vet. And then Prince is the only voice that, you know, Ginta's his only voice he's ever heard in that coaching room. So I think that's something to keep an eye on. 201-939-4513. Jerome in North Carolina. Jerome, what's going on?
Hello?
Yeah, Jerome, you're on. Go ahead.
I think the offense is going to be a whole lot better this year, but my biggest question is I hate that we're all at the lead, you know, threw change at them like they did, other good players we had. But I think they're putting too much pressure on the young guys with no veteran help, you know, to help running the guys. You know, I think the veteran help at safety might hurt us on the deep passes. And why haven't the Giants went out and got a veteran to help all these young guys?
Well, they did actually bring in a veteran, Cody. John, right, from the Colts?
Not Cody. Jordy.
Jordy, I'm sorry. I'm.
Nah, you know what? Hold on a second. I literally had his name in front of me a second.
Oh,
Josh Gordy.
Gordy.
Excuse me. Sorry.
Somehow, someway. We haven't seen him, okay, because
we've
only had
not.
Rookie
That's
minicamp,
correct.
So we haven't had a chance to even see him or meet him. So I apologize, both of us do, for not getting
yes.
his name right. But, he's had some limited experience in this league.
I just did a
VO
on him yesterday, too. And
did
I don't
you?
Know, the name just flitted out of my
okay.
head for some reason.
So he's a veteran who has been brought in. And whether or not, you know, he's going to be able to help these guys, I don't know the answer to that because I haven't met him. But they did bring in somebody who they think can provide some type of veteran leadership at the position. And that's about all I can say.
He's only playing like 10 games at the most at that.
Well, again, I think he's been in the league 3 years. Is that not right? Let me look at his stat line. I think he's a 3-year pro. I think Josh Gordy. He is.
But how many games did he play though?
Josh Gordy
games,
came into the league.
How many games?
Josh Gordy came to the league
two.
In 2010 with the Packers.
Even
he's
longer.
Played in 59 games, started in 11.
Yeah, he's been with the Packers, Rams, Colts, and now Giants. He had experience with Spags with the Rams.
Yep.
Shockey Brown had experience with Spags with the Ravens. So he does have two guys right now on the secondary depth chart who he knows and is familiar with and can maybe help him along with some of the other guys. So I don't think they're barren. Now, they may not have the kind of experience that you'd like or the kind of leadership that you'd like, but let's see if that grows. The point is, he does have some voices there. He knows Spags isn't totally bare here. Okay.
Well, I thank y'all for answering my question. But do you think they will sign another veteran, or is there another good veteran out there right now?
Well, that's the thing. The free agent crop at safety this year wasn't very strong. So,
very thin.
And, you know, Devin McCourty went off the board very quickly. The Giants publicly talked about what a good player they thought he was when they spoke in the offseason. Jerry Reese spoke about that. So, you know, there just weren't that many guys out there, and I think the Giants did the best they could under the financial constraints they were with the salary cap to bring in the guys that they could. I appreciate the call. Thanks a lot, Jerome.
Thank you.
You're welcome. 201-939-4513. I think we have some controversy here, Paul.
What's up?
You got me distracted over this trivia question. Now, here's the trick.
Okay.
If he was referring to the 1968 team, Aaron Thomas was the tight end on that team.
Yes.
So you think he was talking about 70. Maybe he was actually asking about 68 when Bob Tucker
No,
was
because
not on
he
that
mentioned
team.
The Rams, and the Rams' season finale was in 1970. The Giants needed to win the game to become a wild card team, and they lost the game 31-3, which allowed the Cowboys to sneak in as a wild card.
Because they were. In 68, they played the St. Louis Cardinals. Now, maybe he's getting the St. Louis Rams and Cardinals confused. And Thomas that game did have 4 catches, 40 yards. So,
yeah, but the point I think we were talking about in 1970 is that he asked for the tight ends.
Yeah, he did.
I'm not sure. I thought that Bob Tucker and Thomas were the two tight ends there. He thinks it was Crispino. And I'm not going to argue with you, Vic. I'm not sure. You know, did you look up Crispino's career stats?
Let's see. 19. Did he play with the Giants?
Was he there? 1970,
the Giants tight ends were Tucker and Thomas. I do not see Crispino on the 70 team, but Crispino was on the 68 team when he had 7 catches for 130 yards, which is why I think that's where Vic might have had some confusion. And as we're boring people to death with this.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, but Vic, I think if you go into the 68 team, you got me. But I was referring to the 70 game. So I don't know necessarily if either one of us were wrong. We just may have seen from a different angle.
All right. Can't even admit that you're wrong, can you?
Hey.
Can't even admit that you're wrong once.
I just want the right year. That's
okay,
all.
Okay, right. Let's go to Marco in Connecticut. Marco, you're next on Giants.com. What's up?
What's up, guys?
How are you, Marco?
I'm doing well. Good. I'm happy that we cleared that up. I didn't want to come on after Dottino has been stumped by a trivia question.
I tell you, my whole day was ruined.
Yeah, I could tell. I could tell. I'm watching you guys. Hey, a couple interesting points for me before I tell you about my player on defense. A couple areas that I'm looking at this year, especially on defenses, I'm looking at who's the young player that's going to emerge at corner. Maybe it's someone that we're not thinking about right now. Maybe it's Chandler Fenner. Maybe it's Jayron Hosley. I don't know. But there's got to be someone that emerges besides McBride, besides Prince, besides DRC that's going to make that jump. I'm thinking back to in 2007, who's our Kevin Dockery? You know, who's that R.W. McCorders that – McCorders was a veteran, but someone that could, besides our star players. And
remember Emmanuel McDaniel in the 2007 season?
Absolutely.
He was a very important part of that team winning the championship. So you're right. And maybe Shockey Brown. Maybe it's not one of the young guys you just said. Maybe Shockey Brown winds up becoming the fourth corner.
Or Mike Harris. Right. That's another guy that I keep an eye on.
Yeah.
Who's the second defensive end that's going to separate out of the group?
Yep.
And I put Ayers and Double O. Well, Double O's a little young, obviously, but Ayers and DeMontre, I put them all in the same group. We need someone to come out. And now this takes me to the most important player on defense. Spags, what you said, Paul, about how good he is about scheming, it's going to be awesome to watch him come up with the plans versus the Eagles with Chip Kelly and this Dallas offensive line. Spags is going to be huge with that, I think.
Well, Marco, you know what the thing about it? Here's the trick. It's very hard to scheme around a good offensive line. A good offensive line is a good offensive line.
Yeah.
That's why it's so valuable to have. It's hard to scheme around five guys that just block really well.
Yeah, it really is. And to be very, very fair to Coach Perry Fuel, who, you know, really good guy. I know he busted his butt here, won a championship here. To be very fair, all the injured pieces that he had to work with over the last couple of years did not make his job any easier. And if Spags were to have to work with a defense this year that was decimated at corner and at safety and at defensive end, I think he would probably tell you it would be a long, long night for him every night too.
This is not an indictment on Fuel when I say this, though. When I say scheme against the line, I mean when we're sending blitzes, where's the pressure coming from? If we're sending a corner on a blitz, and you know that corner's got to get there, and we've seen that a few times over the last couple of years, that the corner just can't get home and coverage is open, that would kill us against a team like Dallas.
Oh, there's no question. There's no question. See, yeah. Spags won't send very many corner blitzes, though. He prefers the safety blitz. Because remember, when you blitz a corner, there's only one place he can come from, okay? When you blitz a safety, you can send him from the slot around the edge. You can send him into the A gap or the B gap. You can disguise where you're sending a safety blitz. Not so much a corner.
And there's only so much you can do to make up for that corner blitzing. When you blitz a safety, there are a lot of different things you can do with linebackers and zone defenses to make up for it. But if you're bringing that corner off the edge against a wide receiver, that wide receiver is either going to be wide open for that little quick hitter play on the outside, or he's going to be one-on-one with the safety down the sideline. Neither one is a good combination for the defense.
I agree. Well, just to wrap it up, guys, I think the most important player on the defense is John Beeson. Because a variety of reasons. We have to get him on the field for 16 games. I think with the new defensive coordinator coming in, also factor in the loss of role and the leadership that Beeson's going to bring. Beeson's got to be our Antonio Pierce. And, you know, Landon Collins is a good pick there, but think about Beeson as a veteran middle linebacker if you're going to have someone like Collins back there at safety. He would be absolutely huge just in that continuity that I think the defense needs.
I mean, Beeson's an outstanding choice. We see how much the Giants suffer when he's not on the field.
Thank you, Marco.
You know, I like Jameel McClain. Let me make something very clear here. I like him as a leader. I like him as a locker room guy. Bless you, John. And I also think, you know, he's a solid player. But the truth is, he's a better strong side linebacker than he is a middle linebacker.
Correct. I agree. Just like Herzlick is.
Right. And so, you know, and Devon Kennard, again, who may wind up playing some middle. JT Thomas might end up playing some middle. I don't know who's going to wind up being the number two middle linebacker on this team, but I guarantee you that they will not be as effective as John Beeson.
201-939-4513. That's why Beeson, to me, is a legitimate answer. Again, the reason I picked JPP is just because I think he's the best and most talented player on the defense.
Well, he's the one guy who every offensive coordinator, if he's right, is going to be worried about Tuesday when they're starting their game plans.
The other guy that I think is probably the second most talented guy in the defense, I don't think enough people talk about because he was hurt last year and you didn't see him at his best, is Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie, who can be a legitimate, and I think even more so than Prince, I think Prince can be that guy, but I haven't seen him do it yet. I've seen Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie just shut people down when he's right. And I think he's a guy you do in some ways have to game plan against if he's 100% healthy.
I think both guys, if they're really at the peak of their games, they can both be shutdown guys.
No, I think they both can be. I think Cromartie's probably done it more in his career, though, so far than
Prince is a better
tackler,
though.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, no, Prince is a much more physical guy, much better in run support, 100%. But I think DRC has that little extra gear when he runs and probably has some recovery speed that Prince doesn't.
Love to be able to see that gear healthy this year.
That's the trick. 201-939-4513. Len is in Maryland. Leonard, a long time no speak. It's been about a week.
Yeah. Hi, guys. How
What's
you
up,
doing?
Len? Hi, Len.
Wait, just real quick with Paul. I'll keep it real short. That was a meaningless game to the Rams that year, 1970, and they really kicked our butts that day. George Allen had that team ready to play.
I know.
We just got overwhelmed.
Gogolak kicked a field goal to make it 3-0. All right. Yeah, the Giants are on top at Yankee Stadium in the game. And Marty Glickman's calling the game, and I'm just eating it up. And then, of course, the Rams score the next 31 points. I think they turned over the Giants four times. Tarkanen got sacked like four times. It was really ugly.
Do you guys want to feel real bad about yourselves right now?
What?
That game took place 11 years before I was born.
All right.
What else you got, Len?
Forty-five years ago, and Paul, I was sitting in the left field bleachers at Yankee Stadium.
Were you at the game? Oh, my God.
I was at that game. Well, I saw them all. What can I tell you? I'm a season ticket holder.
Wow.
I've seen everything.
In the days of the blackout, I was stuck with my
Panasonic
portable transistor radio listening glued to Marty Glickman, Chip Cipolla.
Len, you don't have no idea how jealous Paul Dottino is.
I'm really. I mean, the fact that you were at that game, although a heart, I mean, just devastation to lose that game 31-3.
Oh, it was terrible. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I think the Giants thought that the Rams were just going to – had gotten on a plane, come 3,000 miles, and were going to quit because the season was over for them.
But remember, that was the fearsome foursome Rams defensive front now. That was a really good team.
It was a good team. It was a good team, but it was a meaningless game to them at that particular time. And one other tight end of the time, and it may have been a little later than 1970, but our good friend Dick Cotite.
Yeah.
Who played in the early 70s. I don't think he's the answer to the trivia question.
He's not. I think Cotite was there in 71.
Yeah, okay. Yep, Dick Cotite. How about that? Hey, listen, I want to talk about JPP real quick. July 15th, last date a team and a franchise player can agree on a long-term contract or the player must play under the 1 year.
July 15th.
Franchise. July 15th.
Yes.
July 15th. Now, hopefully it doesn't come into play JPP signs his tender, or the Giants, figure out a long-term deal with JPP. But that's a key date. But one question: is that also the last date by which the Giants can pull the franchise tag?
Yes, because at that point he has to sign it. So once it's signed, the Giants obviously can't pull that thing back.
Well, if he doesn't sign up till July 15th, on July 14th, can the Giants pull the franchise tag on JPP and said, you know what, we're not interested anymore,
and just let him go totally free with no compensation?
Now, Len,
I'm not saying they're going to do that. I'm just saying and teams have pulled the franchise tag before.
I believe that is correct. I believe they can, Len. I'm not 100% sure.
Okay.
But I think until the 15th, I think much like the player can sign the franchise tag, I believe the team can also pull it back. I will try to double check that rule, but I believe that is the case.
I'm not 1,000% sure, so let's see if John can look that up. But Len, honestly, I mean, that's a billion-to-one shot that they would even consider pulling that back.
Well, let me ask you a question. What the heck's going on?
Here's the thing. I'm sure that his representatives, and I have not talked to JPP, nor have I talked to his camp, but I'm sure they're still thinking maybe there's a way we can get a good long-term deal in here.
There you go.
And we can, you know, secure this thing for the next 3, 4, 5 years.
July 15th becomes a key date.
Yeah, but right now it's only May 15th, so they're probably saying, what's the harm?
I understand.
Let's see if over the next two months, if we can talk and work something out, what's the harm? He's not missing any games.
I hope they do, because I want the guy around for a long time. I really would like to see this guy play. I think he's a terrific player.
Len, I just want to say one thing to you, and I mean this wholeheartedly. I've said this before 1,000 times on the show, and I mean this now. JPP is not looking at the franchise tag as a demonic device. Some players look at the franchise tag, see it as a negative, and get very antagonistic towards the franchise or the team because they think that their income is being limited and they don't like it, and they get very angry and they threaten holdouts. That's not the case with JPP, at least as I know it now. Now, could one of his agents get in his head and change his mind? Always can happen. But as far as I know, JPP is actually fine with the franchise tag, fine with the numbers, and he's got every intention, when he needs to be here, to sign it and play for it. That's my understanding.
All right, and Len, real quick, I have the rule here for you so I can read this
please.
So we have it. This is off of Pro Football Talk, and I will just read this portion to you. The amount of the franchise tender becomes fully guaranteed once the player signs it. Since signing the franchise tender puts the player under contract, requiring him to show up to all mandatory offseason activities and training camp, some players choose to wait deep into the preseason before inking the offer. That's, Len, probably why he hasn't signed it yet, because you don't want to risk injury by doing some of the offseason stuff. Now, here's the thing. The risk in that is that the franchise tag can be withdrawn at any time before it has been signed. It doesn't happen often, but it's not unprecedented, especially in Philadelphia. In 2002, the Eagles pulled the franchise tag from Jeremiah Trotter in early April. 3 years later, the Eagles removed the franchise tag from defensive tackle Corey Simon in late August. The move immediately converts the player to an unrestricted free agent. But if it comes after big money has been spent, the player will have a hard time getting the payday he would have realized on the first day of free agency. So
good
that's
stuff.
The rule.
Okay. I just hope this doesn't turn out to be a situation where we go deep into training camp. And
Len, because training camp isn't going to start until the end of July, and the date is July 15th. So it can't possibly go into training camp.
And remember, once July 15th passes, you cannot sign then a long-term deal.
Right,
once
July
15th gets there, it's either the franchise tag or it's nothing.
Right.
Okay. All right, and we'll take Paul's word for it, and I think he's probably right, that JPP, risking injury, all that kind of thing, but probably will be in training. By July 15th, he'll sign that franchise tender and be in training camp, and I'm keeping my fingers crossed. Hey, listen, thanks for taking the call. You guys have a great weekend.
See you, Len.
And I look forward to talking to you again. Thank you.
Appreciate it. 201-939-4513.
You know, the one thing I would say about JPP, and you could talk all you want about his injuries. He's certainly had a few over the last couple of years. The one thing about him is when he's been right, when he has been healthy, John, I've seen a really, really good player, and I've seen a guy who in the last year, specifically during the course of last season, seemed to grow up some, seemed to understand a little bit more about what his responsibility was as the churn of the roster started to happen and the OCs were gone and the tucks were gone. And it looked to me like JPP started to, like I say, mature, grow up.
Yeah.
He started to get it.
And well, someone on Twitter actually asked Paul, do you think JPP can be a captain this year?
I don't know if I'd put that on him. I think that's probably asking much.
Okay.
You know, I mean, John Beeson's the guy right now, and I can't see any reason to take the C off of his chest. But I will say that Jason seemed to kind of like having some of the new folks around and kind of being the man who was showing them the giant way. He seemed to really grow into that. It kind of put a smile on his face. I mean, he really loves DeMontre Moore. He looks at him like a little brother. And you know, I just sense a difference in him. And I will say this, even though he had a lot of trouble stopping the read option, which was just a total bugaboo for him every single time it was run, other than that particular play, JPP played extremely well against the run last year.
Oh, absolutely.
And much better than he had in any season before. So I do see growth in him, is what I'm saying. And if he's healthy, I think he's going to have a real bang-up year.
Couple tweets very quickly from @JCS02008. Does Nassib have any real competition for the backup quarterback, or does he have it locked up?
I don't see anybody beating him.
I agree. Justin Smith might be out of San Francisco. Would make a nice addition to next to Big Hankins. Well, if Justin Smith leaves the Niners, that means he's retiring. So he's not going to retire from the Niners and then go play for the Giants.
Don't think so.
And, by the way, I don't think that's even allowed. This would still then be under contract with the 49ers
right. Because
that contract would be activated once again.
I don't even know if his papers are in, to be honest.
No, apparently he's still having conversations with the Niners about whether or not he's actually going to retire.
Yeah.
He says he feels good physically now, but as he said, everyone feels good physically.
No doubt.
May. The question is how good are you going to feel?
Well, he might walk in right beforehand like Strahan did, remember, 2007.
Right. @ColeWiss88, I would love to see the Giants do Hard Knocks. Not going to happen. We have some great storylines this season. Paul, your thoughts on Giants doing Hard Knocks? Hello?
Not happening, and keep it away.
Oh, you would love to be a star
no.
of Hard Knocks.
No,
They would give you one of those, like, three-minute bumpers.
No,
It would be DeTino roaming the sidelines.
No.
It would be great.
I want nothing to do with Hard Knocks.
They would follow you to the tanning salon. It would be fantastic.
Oh, please. This is all natural, folks, believe me. But aside from that, you know what? That's a distraction.
Going on the road in the preseason, they'd follow you on your power walks. That, I think it would be great television. Great television.
Seriously.
He's just ignoring me.
I'm trying to. It's hard sometimes, but I'm trying to. Seriously, to me, and I appreciate from a fan's perspective how cool that program is because it opens a ton of doors for you. But for me, I just think it's a distraction the organization does not need. That's just my opinion.
I happen to agree with you, and I think the Giants probably are on that same page as well.
Yeah.
201-939-4513. Two more calls before we say goodbye. Alex in Georgia. Alex?
Hey, P-Dot.
Hi.
Hi, John.
Hi, Alex. How are you?
I'm great. Listen, I just wanted to respond to the question that you guys posed about the critical position.
Sure.
I believe it's the invisible man in the secondary, the safety position. Other than our star rookie, I think as a chess player, when I play, I go to my opponent's perceived weakness. And right now, the only place that I see that is unsure, that is unbooked, is that secondary safety position. Whoever is placed in that position is going to be critical because the opposing team can go deep, presuming that Collins, is in the box. Somebody mentioned before about the fact that Spags likes to do safety blitzes. Well, who's going to be that other guy? So I'm going to say the invisible guy, whoever they put in there, is the critical guy.
Player X.
The invisible man.
You know, you make an interesting point because at the moment, and I think we're going to have to let him go because he's getting a lot of feedback going on. So thank you. He makes an interesting point, John, because we really have no clue. And again, Nat Burhe would seem to have a foot up on everybody else who's competing for the
safety
spot.
Only because he's the only guy that was here last year, and he played a couple downs at safety.
Right.
And he was a draft pick.
But
that's literally the only reason.
But we really don't know.
No, we have no idea.
Bennett Jackson, and he moved around very well last week at rookie minicamp coming off microfracture surgery. Bennett Jackson probably has just as much of a shot as anybody to try to win that spot.
And heck, what if everything goes wrong and they do end up moving Shockey Brown there? What happens if they're like, oh boy, Michael Thompson's not ready. Bennett Jackson, maybe he's not ready yet either. Maybe we got to move a veteran there. You know what? Shockey Brown could be the guy for all we know. Who the hell knows?
Nobody knows. It's truly a mystery. Here's the only thing I will say.
It could be a guy not even on the roster yet.
It could be. It could be. I'll say this, though. I will say this. Landon Collins is going to get a real, real, real quick study in bookwork from Spags because that's something Spags needs. He needs a very heady, smart,
absolutely
football-savvy safety in his secondary. And if they're already in their mind saying Collins is going to be one of the two starters, and I'm sure that they feel that way. I mean, no one's come out and said that, but I think it's a pretty safe bet that you draft the guy where you drafted him, he's going to start at one of those spots. If I'm Landon Collins, I'm picking everybody's brain right now. In fact, I'm going to tell you something. I don't think I'm out of school, John. Deion Grant spends a lot of time around this facility.
He was actually here at rookie minicamp.
He was here at rookie minicamp, and he was checking out Landon Collins. Okay? Deion Grant is exactly the kind of guy who needs to get with Landon Collins and become his big brother. You asked earlier one of the callers. It said, why don't the Giants have any veteran guys in the safety room or the safety spot to kind of help these guys out? Deion Grant can be a pseudo coach as a big brother, as kind of like a giant sage, if you will, who has been a champion. He's worked with Spags. He's been here in New York. He's still very much welcomed by the organization. He can be an influence on this rookie.
Did he work with Spags?
Yeah.
Where? Not here.
Oh, you're right. He didn't because he was only here a couple of years.
And he was
gone.
Perry.
He was here with Perry. You're absolutely right. Let me take that back. Did not work with Spags. No Spags, though.
Of course.
And, in fact, here's the connection with Spags. When Deion Grant was a free agent from the Panthers, and he was going to come to the Giants.
Yeah. Yep. That was, 2004-ish?
God. I don't want to say. I want to say maybe five.
06 maybe? Something like
that. I was going to say
five. In that area.
Five or six. He was going to come to the Giants and really wanted to be here, and they really wanted him. And he wound up signing with Seattle. They made him the richest paid safety in football.
I would have went there too.
Okay. But he always had a fondness for the Giants, and he followed Spags and studied Spags very much because Spags was a safety-friendly coach.
Yeah.
So let me correct myself. He knows Spags. He understands the system. He never actually played for him. So let me clear that up.
Make sure we had it right.
Well, we want to.
Let's go to Jeffrey, Rhode Island. You're our final caller today. Jeffrey, how are you?
Hey, good afternoon, guys. How you doing today?
Hey, Jeff. How are you, pal?
Very good, good. Just for the record, Bobby Crispino came from Mississippi. He played for the Giants from 64 to 68.
Right. He was not on the 70 team.
No, he wasn't.
So Vic and I just got to get our dates aligned, and once we got those dates aligned, we're okay.
Yeah.
Don't make me ban trivia questions. I'll do it. If this is what every trivia question
mandate, playoffs or else, it seems like it's putting a tremendous amount of pressure on Coach Spags to get the team coached up, the defense coached up, and whipped into shape and get everybody on the same page of the playbook. And to me, it almost seems unfair. But, he's really got his work cut out for him. And, to my way of thinking, the defense is going to determine a lot about how our season's going to play out.
Well, Jeff,
we all know that the offense is going to score enough points to win games.
Jeff,
I don't think that's a consideration even.
Jeff, hold on 1 second. I will say this very quickly on the point you just made. Yes, there's a lot of pressure on everybody in this building to win this year.
We all know
that's the case.
Right.
But
I will
say this. I don't care where Steve Spagnuolo went and was a defensive coordinator this year. based on what happened when he was the head coach for the Rams, and again, I'm not saying it was his fault, but the record's still the record. The wins and losses are still on him, despite the fact he didn't have a quarterback because of Sam Bradford's injuries. And then what happened when he went to New Orleans, Spags is also coaching for his own professional career as a defensive coordinator. If he fails at wherever his next defensive coordinator spot was going to be, whether it was with the Giants or anybody else, it would have been very hard for him to land another D coordinator job relatively soon. It's hard to move on from three places after there wasn't a ton of success, the Rams, the Saints, and then the Giants, and then land another coordinator spot. So I don't think there's any added pressure on Steve Spagnuolo because of the Giants and the situation here with the franchise. I think his own professional pride and, you know, his want to succeed overrides all of that. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's no doubt the guy's an outstanding coach. There's no two ways about that.
Yeah.
We all understand that. It's just that he's been away, and, you know, I can't say it's almost like a first-year coach coming in, but because he's been out of the Giants for so long, it just seems like a lot's been thrown at him. And, Paulie, here's one for you.
Yeah.
It's probably close to about 50 years ago now. There was to be a foot race between Homer Jones and Bob Hayes to determine who was the fastest man in the NFL.
I did not hear of this.
And the Cowboys bailed out on it because I believe it was Gil Brandt that arranged the whole thing. I could be wrong, but he bailed out. He nixed the whole thing because he knew that Homer Jones was, in fact, a faster runner than Bob Hayes was. So maybe our friend down in Maryland can call in next week and verify some of that. But I know I read that at some point in time. And
great story,
always,
if it's true.
Always stuck with me, yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to. You know what? I'm going to dig into that one a little bit because that sounds like a fun story. By the way, Homer Jones, John, still among qualifiers on the all-time NFL wide receiving chart. He does lead the all-time catches, 20 in terms of average yards per catch, at over 22 yards a catch. He's still number one all-time in the NFL.
Yep. Yeah, he was a pretty good player
while
we had him. And then he ran out of gas, and he had a bad wheel, and we got something for him from the Browns, so that was a good thing.
Yep.
So you guys have a great day, okay? And I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Jeff. Paul, very quickly, I want to touch on two more tweets that came in before we say goodbye.
Yes.
From Thomas Seymour, is Cooper Taylor so bad that he is hardly even mentioned as a possibility in the safety competition? Then Ben Gruen, any chance Cooper Taylor, if healthy, could actually play some defense? Right, for now, he's been the Ramsey's Barton of the secondary. Great size, but no production. Guys, it's health. He hasn't even had a chance to play. I mean, I think Cooper Taylor has a lot of talent. He has a lot of size, a lot of speed. But his body's betrayed him. He hasn't been able to stay on the field for any consistent period of time. He's been on IR the last two seasons.
He's an unknown quantity.
Yep.
And that's kind of why it's so easy when we discuss the safety spot to forget about him, because he's been in the trainer's room for 2 years. Look, again, God bless him. Bring them all in. Let them all get out on the field in August and let them all compete. And may the best guys win. This is the one thing I have to say, John, the one thing, and you can look at half glass full, half glass empty, all you want. It's the one thing good about not having established guys at a position. You are truly going to have competition, and the best guys are going to win because they're all going to get an equal chance.
And Tom Coughlin loves that, by the way.
Competition. Because, see, there's no one in front of you to block you. You're going to get what you earn.
Yep.
So.
Absolutely right. Should be a lot of fun. Now, OTAs begin not this Wednesday coming up, the Wednesday following that, correct? That's the first day of OTAs, and they're Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Then they have two or three every week leading up to mandatory minicamp, which top of my head. I have it on my calendar here. Let me see if I can look it up real quick.
16, 17, 18.
Are those the actual dates?
Yeah. June 16, 17, 18 is minicamp.
I know it's a Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday in June. And, yes, correct. It is 16th, 17th, and 18th. And that's the minicamp. Then we're not going to see the guys again until probably the last week of July.
Right.
Somewhere, I think the earliest camp can open is the 30th?
30th.
So that's usually report day, and then the first practice would be the 31st, right?
Yeah.
Theoretically, the Giants still have not released that schedule. Just based on how the preseason is set up, that's the earliest they could possibly come in. And the assumption would be that Tom Coughlin would probably want to maximize his practice time.
You would think so.
We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
You would think so.
Paul, excellent work.
Good show.
Enjoy your weekend, my friend.
You too.
I will do likewise. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Had a lot of good conversation. That topic, I think, was pretty interesting. We had a little conversation on it, so we appreciate you being a part of it. Have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday when Big Blue Kickoff comes back at noon on Monday afternoon. We'll see you then.
Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
What a hit. No punt. Broken intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.